Being a good parent isn't just about having a set of skills or knowing the right thing to do all the time. Ask any good parent you know. They can tell you their pro tips, but most are happy to admit that a lot of parenting feels like winging it. Who we are and how we continue to grow matters because our kids pick up most of what they learn from us by watching how we do things, not by listening to our instructions. So join me on this journey of remodeling our mindsets so that our actions speak to those watching. I'm Dr. Dina Shelton, and this is Remodel Parenting. Welcome back, everyone, to Remodel Parenting Podcast. Today, we're starting a new series I'm calling All About Development. Today, I'm laying the groundwork for this series as we get ready to jump into human development, how human beings grow and develop through the lifespan, and what that means for us as parents and how we can apply it to our own children's lives, but also to our own lives. I want to do a series on this, and I've been thinking about doing it for a while. I mentioned development frequently, and in a couple of the other series, I have talked a little bit about Erickson's psychosocial stages, and I bring those in from time to time, and every time I think it would be worth doing a whole series on this to break down some of these stages and help people understand what's happening socially, emotionally, mentally, and physically that impact how people learn and grow at every stage. Now, many people go into the idea of development as being a childhood thing, that kids grow and develop until they become adults, and then it cuts off at adulthood. Then you're grown, you have developed, and then the rest of life is just playing that out. Really, nothing can be further from the truth. We continue to develop all the way through our lifespan. That is not just physical and emotional and social development. Those things develop over time too. When we talk about development, we're really talking about change. In childhood and into adolescence and young adulthood, most of it is growing into capacity. However, for the rest of adulthood and even some in between, our ability to use it and how healthy it is based on how we're interacting with it and what we're doing with what we have. And then there are also declines and changes in needs, desires, hopes, and dreams all the way through life that are guided by developmental stages. Other stages of development are not necessarily linear in terms of our age, but they're based on our life experiences and the marked experiences that change the way that we function in the world or see ourselves. An example of that would be a marriage or having a child, where we have pretty significant identity changes and ideas of who we are as a person and what that means for us long term. Now, there are some broader overarching beliefs about development in terms of what is the most influential on people's development. How do people grow and develop? Is it straight biological? Is most of it genetic? Is most of it social and environmental? Who's the most influential in how a child develops? This is the age-old nature versus nurture conversation. This conversation has been being had all through all of the years that human science and studying human development and families has been a question, even before that in early philosophical wonderments. But the idea of, are we really set in who we are when we get here, or are we built and shaped by the people and the environments around us? And the answer is yes. The debates tend to move into how much are each of those influential. But the bottom line in terms of reality is that both influence who we are and what we do. There are some things about us that are written in and coded into our genetics and our DNA that bend us into certain directions that may provide us with more opportunities in some areas or less in some areas. And there are also many, many things in our environments and our families that even engage with what's inside of us and that we are internalizing or that is already coded into us and can activate or deactivate what those things are. So there's some genetic potential and some genetic opportunities that may never even be activated in people. An example of that is straight intelligence and IQ. When we measure people's intelligence, we're really looking at things like memory, processing speed, the ability to form rational, logical thought processes, pattern recognition, and the speed and quickness with which people think. That's what most IQ tests are comprised of, are exercises that show and measure those things. What we know is that IQ tends to be more stable over the course of someone's life. Some people are going to test, people are going to have their IQ tested. It's going to be similar at each stage of development, even if they are taking a test that's adapted for a child and then taking one as an adult. You're going to have a small range, very small ranges of change, and that's usually due to the margin of error. However, what we know more now than ever is how influential environmental factors can be on the activation or not of the intelligence that's already there. So a child who has been in a traumatic situation may score very low on an IQ test, and it is likely an accurate read of where they are functioning and what they have the capacity to do at that moment. However, if that child is given stability, security, attachment, connection, and other needs are met, it may unlock and open doors, and you might see changes in even overall IQ, where what typically has been said is that you can't, IQ is a standard measure of how the body processes, how the brain processes, right? So it's a body functioning. And we used to always say IQ couldn't change. However, the measurement of it and what's accessible to the person may change based on their environment. And so it is a very complicated process. And with that, it's important to note and notice and recognize that we are all developing organisms, that all of us are in a constant state of growth and development and change. And really, for me, it's an encouragement to me and to everyone that I speak to and teach. And this is whether it's the counselors that I'm teaching in their own work for themselves, in their work with their clients, or when they're working with families and working with the parents and spouses and people in relationships with one another. It's slowing down and remembering that transformation happens sometimes, but not always. And when I say transformation, I mean those transformative moments where maybe there are these moments of enlightenment or moments of growth or moments of things happening, and they happen quickly, and maybe we wait for a while for them, but that the actual change process happens very, very rapidly. That happens sometimes, but most growth and change in humans is developmental. It unfolds over time. It requires interactions, engagement, cause and effect, learning, consequences, all types of things. And if you really think about your own life, you can track this back and think about the things that were harder for you to learn. For some of us, it's about finances. For some of us, it's about relationships and being able to forgive or being able to resolve conflict and come back to the table. When we're learning about those types of things, we don't usually go from being, you know, hard-headed and stubborn to somehow miraculously transforming into someone who is more open and more agreeable by nature. Trust me, if we could, I'd have figured that one out for myself. But those kinds of processes are developmental over time in that we learn how to submit our own will. We learn how to check our own thoughts. We learn how to slow down and be present with other people. We learn how to watch our mouths, right, and not say things. And usually we can track back to multiple time frames in life at different ages where something went wrong and it was a tougher lesson to learn and the consequences of our actions had to weigh on us. And those things then coded in and shifted how we grew and developed. That's how it works most of the time. That doesn't mean that transformation in some of these areas can't happen. It doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. It's just that if that's the expectation for how we change, especially internally and in areas that do tend to have to grow, we can get really frustrated and then not grow or change at all just due to those expectations and the way that we think it will go. But growth is the way that everything moves. We are constant, dynamic, active beings that we don't stay the same. None of us do. What a couple needs when they first get married and what they expect their marriage to look like in the early years changes drastically if you speak to those people 15 years in and 30 years in, what they need from one another, what they need from life in general, what they value, how they think about the world. Those aspects are still developing all the way through life. And the healthiest of relationships have the space to contain and move and shift and be flexible to learn together and continue to grow and build together what's needed. So what all develops in us? Everything, right? Our body and our brain develops physically. Our mind and thought develop, the cognitive processes. So our brain develops and grows on its own in physical properties, but our mind also develops. We don't all get to have really strong logic and reasoning unless we've practiced it, exercised it, and it has developed. Our spirit, our soul, the internal part of us that contains our emotions and our feelings and are connected to those pieces, that grows and develops over time as well. Our values and our morals develop. Young kids don't have words for their morals and values. They may be able to repeat something their parents have said, but it hasn't sunk in like when you talk to a full-grown adult about what they value in life. Ethics and integrity develop. Our identity and our self-awareness, how much we know about ourselves. That's not something that is ingrained. There are things ingrained in us that we are, but how much we know about it, very much developmental. Our empathy and our connection to other people. Some people would assume that how connected we feel and how we're able to connect to others is an inborn trait as well. Very much not true. Now, there are pieces of our personality that make us more prone to being aware of others' emotions, to tapping into others' emotions. Our emotional reactivity may determine how much we notice that we feel what other people are feeling or that we pick up on the feelings of others. But that's not the same thing as empathy and connecting. Empathy is a practice. It's something that we do. It's not something even that we feel. We take the time to connect with something that another person is going through and really do some mental work around imagining what it's like to be in their shoes and connecting with those same emotions in a way that is helpful for everyone. Reason, logic, those develop over time. When you use them, they become stronger. If you don't, you don't get them. Passion and motivation develop. Those things are not pieces that are just dropped into us, and they develop by exposure to other things and by our own actions and involving in the things that start to ignite that so that it grows over time. And our goals and drives, those develop too. Goals that you had for your life when you were 15 are probably not the same as you do at 30. Most of the time, sometimes there are some similarities, but the things that we focus on and value and we're moving towards shift significantly, especially as things around us are changing. Now, one of the biggest pieces about growth and development and understanding and looking at life, at ourselves and our kids through a developmental lens, is understanding that you can't rush growth. An example that I give a lot of times when I am talking to people about learning to be a counselor and learning to be a professional helper. When you go to counseling school, it's not what most people imagine that it is, though I don't know that very many people imagine it if they're not planning to go. But when you first kind of start talking to people about counseling school, they imagine a lot of feelings and a lot of soft, you know, connections and class, and some of that happens. It's not that that's untrue. But in reality, counseling school really puts people through processes where they have to really get in touch with their own experiences, their own development, their own blocks and issues, start doing their own healthy internal work, and be prepared to be a container for other people's work and to help ignite that in other people. Well, that's a growth process. You don't go from being even just moderately good or okay at gauging where someone else is and suddenly decide that you're going to be tuned into people at a much deeper level and just be able to do it. Over time, you have to practice tuning into someone else and have someone looking at you and saying, that's not really how you do it, or this is where you're in your own head here because this is what you're thinking about instead, and growing and developing and shifting you through that process. It's very exposing, by the way. Your counselors that you go see, they have done their own work and they have been through the ringer on things and have submitted themselves to a process to be pushed and moved and taught and educated, but really grown. And so I tell students who come to our programs, and we'll have students come in and they plan to do the program in 2 years, which can be done, but it is a lot of work in 2 years and it feels very rushed. Almost everyone that I speak to at the end, even if they're glad that they are finished and that they finished in their goal time, wish that they had had more time to go through the information slower, because what you're learning in that program has to be integrated into who you are. And the skills have to be practiced over time, and you can't rush that part. So what I find is whether someone graduates in 2 years or graduates in 3 or 3.5 years, in my experience supervising people afterward, there's not a significant amount of skill difference between the two of them at year five, except that sometimes people who graduate in, take longer to graduate, have had more developmental time, and they were able to incorporate in a slower pace, and so they're not feeling like they're playing as catch up. And so sometimes I will see less stress in those who just leaned into doing it slower, and that was an expectation, versus those who were trying to get it done as fast as possible. Now, I tell that story because I think it coordinates and overlaps with life really well, that when we're moving through life and the expectations that we're going to keep getting through things and get on the other side of things, we feel like we can rush the processes, but we don't. If anything, we may skip them, and then we have to go back and fill them in later for ourselves, for our kids, or they will have to with a counselor, you know, later. And it can create messes that if we just settle in and we embrace the developmental processes, we can maybe do it in a way that creates stability and that doesn't cause more issues just because of how we're handling it. When we see everything through a lens of development, we can find paths out and not just figure out what's wrong or get sucked into the drama of what's going on in our homes. And the way that we develop early in life influences how we are for the rest of our lives. We have processes inside of us that activate early. Attachment is an example of that. In early childhood, in infancy, we are learning how to attach to our mothers. And it's not even a cognitive learning. It is an internal drive to connect and attach and form strong bonds with other people. How that goes when we're infants impacts us generally for the rest of our lives. Now, does that mean that people who struggled early in life or didn't have healthy attachments early in life are doomed? Absolutely not. More now than ever, we understand how to help grow and foster healthy attachment, even when those processes weren't good from the start. However, what I will say is that in my experience, people who struggled early or had parents who struggled with attachment and therefore did not really attach well to them, or their family had a lot of problems and struggles around the time when they were a young child, it tends to be a topic of conversation for most of the rest of their lives. It becomes something that they learn how to heal from and how to move through, but it doesn't make it go away, if that makes sense. So during this process and during this series, I'm going to use science and theories that we understand about human growth and development, and the science and the best ideas that we have from years and years and years of research. So I'm going to anchor a lot of this series in neuroscience and brain development. I love Erikson's theory of psychosocial development, thought development from Piaget. And this is some of the earliest cognitive development theory that we have, and we still really anchor to it, even though we've made some adjustments. We're going to talk a little bit about moral development and how our mindset of what's right grows. And we're going to talk about social learning, which is early, starting with Vygotsky, and the idea and understanding that our learning happens by watching those around us. And that is the heart and soul of remodel parenting, is understanding that how we model for our children really builds what they do. So I hope you'll go with me on this journey. This is really helpful, first and foremost, to learn about yourself. Learning about yourself is vital to caring for others. In fact, attachment and in family science, when we're studying and looking at connections and deep relationships, connections and intimacy with other people, we know that you can't form those without self-awareness and knowledge of yourself. Because the very basic building blocks of connection is self-disclosure and being able to share with someone else what's inside of you. Learning about these kinds of topics gives you content to use for that. It helps you if you share it with someone else to be closer and more connected to them. It's also going to help you care for your children and track their abilities and needs and hopefully form more options for connection and successes for them, and also hopefully for you as their parents. But it's also going to help you care for others around you who may be struggling in different ways. And this includes other family members, including adult family members. If you're in a stage of life where you're caring for aging parents, if you're a grandparent and you are empty nesting, all of these stages are going to help you in your own processes, but they're also going to help you with anyone you know who is in a different stage. So I hope that you will tune in to these next 7 episodes. They're going to be divided by life stages and by age. And in the next episode, we're going to start with the first 2 years. So I hope you'll be sure to join us. Thank you so much for listening to Remodel Parenting. If you know someone who could benefit from this episode, I hope you'll share it with them. And if you love what we're doing, like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you have topics you'd like to hear about, email us at info@theremodelproject.com.